Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
46% of Americans expect to leave behind financial obligations when they pass away, so it's crucial to make sure your family is financially protected. Policy Genius helps you find the right life insurance coverage by comparing options from America's top insurers with help from licensed, award-winning agents. Secure your financial future with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com to get free life insurance quotes in just a few clicks. That's policygenius.com.
Hey, this is Tyler.
And this is KC.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
What is happening, all of you woods people? I know the woods are a little bit less leafy these days, but that still makes them the woods. I hope everyone is having a terrific December, because it's a December to remember, to tell you the truth. We didn't win any cars from Mercedes or anything like that, but is it Lexus or who does that?
Man,
I don't remember.
You know, I pay so little attention to those commercials, it's not even funny.
I don't even watch them, but I remember this, the bows on the cars. I think it's Mercedes. Anyways.
Maybe Lexus. I think I watched an SNL skit about that
the other
day.
We're going to give y'all a free advertisement, because I know none of y'all are actually the type that are going to buy those type cars, so we're going to just name drop them. Anyways, guys. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
The Element crew. Remember that this is a time that the whole world celebrates the birth of Christ. It's pretty cool. Pretty cool time, to tell you the truth of the matter. But we've been out doing some public land hunting here in Texas. Been really on some deer, which feels good, to tell you the truth of the matter, because we spent a lot of Decembers in the past that are not to remember, because the deer are hard to find. But this year's been... Yeah, I done forgot all those. if you really want to see some of those episodes, go watch... just search Public Land Chronicles on YouTube, and you'll see how terrible things were in the past.
Yeah,
but alas, we have graduated up to better things. But first, there's a couple things that Tyler and I want to tell you about.
Okay? Housekeeping.
Housekeeping matters here. do not hang that Do Not Disturb on your door, because we got to talk. We are doing a extravaganza egotistical, ectastic,
ignoramus
giveaway here at the Old Element. Okay, so seriously though, guys, you've probably heard us talk a little bit about this, but we want to make sure you know about it. We have now very well reached into the 11,000 range of YouTube subscribers, but this is for the 10,000 giveaway, because that's a big milestone. Okay, so what we need you to do, if you haven't yet, go over to YouTube, subscribe, or if you have subscribed, still go there, take a screenshot on your phone. So that means if you have an iPhone, you click the middle button and the side button, and it takes a picture. Okay, some of y'all didn't know what that was, so I know we're dealing with some boomers here, but you click those, and then you send us that on Facebook or Instagram in messages. Okay, and you'll be entered into the 10,000 giveaway. We've told you all the stuff, but lots of free gear, all the stuff that we use and love.
Mm-hmm.
We aren't even giving you anything that we don't like, so it's all the stuff that we like. So be sure you're entered into that. And while we're talking about YouTube, we're about to have a really big-time video come out. I feel personally pretty big-time, because KC doesn't get to make the YouTube channel killing big bucks as often as Tyler does. So this one's for me, guys.
Dude, it's the coolest video, dude. I put it together, you know, recently, and just like got to watch it and all, and it is just the best, man. I'm going to be posting a teaser for you guys of this thing on social here pretty soon, and you are just going to be fired up about it.
I'm pretty pumped, dude. I haven't watched any of this outside of my camera screen, so like I haven't got to see any of it large, and I'm pretty excited about it, to tell you the truth of the matter. I've kind of been holding off, you know.
Dude, speaking of large watching, I'm gonna buy a large TV for my house.
I'm excited, and we're gonna
never really cared or wanted one really too much.
Yeah,
but I'm like, dude, because like when I watch stuff on my computer as opposed to my phone, it's like so much cooler.
Oh,
and like I'm like, dude, TVs, you can get some cheap TVs these days.
Yeah,
man.
Dude,
like, and give me a 70-incher. Let's do this.
Dude,
thing.
You can get a 70-inch like 1080p TV for like little nothing.
I know.
You know,
man.
Who needs 4K? You know what I mean?
I mean, I'm going to have 4K, but you don't necessarily need it, but I mean, dude, I'm going to definitely have 4K.
But we're going to watch season videos, and then we're going to watch a little bit of Midwest Whitetail. That's what we're going to watch. That's what's going to happen.
Yep.
We love Bill, man. But
where has Bill been?
Dude, he has been, I don't know.
He ran out of farms.
Anyways, guys, we have a special request from y'all, okay? We need your help, okay? That's kind of why we've been doing this giveaway that's YouTube-oriented, because, like we've said many times, Tyler and I are pushing to be able to do this more and be able to provide for our families doing something we love. So we're very thankful for y'all, very thankful for your support. Something you can do for us, specifically on this video, is go to YouTube and watch the whole thing. Because watch time helps us with YouTube and helps our videos be optimized so that more people watch them. So if you like what we do, even if you don't, you're going to like this video, all right? Tyler says it's epic. I was there for the whole thing while it was filmed, of course. It's pretty sweet. It's pretty fun, man. If y'all don't mind me saying this, I felt pretty good about the self-filming job I did on this whole video.
Dude,
and then
it's awesome.
The recovery and everything, like, you know, no cliffhangers here. We got the deer. It felt like a cliffhanger when I was living it out. But anyways, go watch the whole video, because that would help us out a ton, guys, like so much.
Yeah.
And if you like it, you know, share it with your friends and tell people about it. We're going to release that thing on Tuesday, December 29th, probably 6, 7 p.m., something like that. It's kind of when they usually go, Central Time. Essential time, yeah. Central time.
Uh-huh.
I talk too fast for my own good most of the time. That's why I repeat things on the podcast sometimes, because I'm sure that it doesn't go over well. But anyways, we really appreciate your support, guys, and thank y'all so much for all that. And speaking of that, we like this community that's starting to build, you know, here with the old Element crowd. I don't know what you call us. You know, when we first got started, we talked about like
the elementals.
Yeah, the elementals, the isotopes, and we were like, man, that's too nerdy. So, anyways, we're just going to call it the Element family, I guess, or something. But we appreciate the support. So, some of y'all, when we were talking about what we're going to do for a giveaway, some of you actually said win a hunt with us. And we thought that there was no way that people would actually want to win that, so we decided to just do it as opposed to a winning thing. So if you haven't yet and you want to come hang out with us, in February we're going to have a meetup / seminar / hog hunt that's going to be like a two-day event, a day-and-a-half event. We're going to show up on a Friday afternoon, share a meal together, have some fellowship, and do maybe some Q&A stuff, talk about how to hog hunt public land, how to find public land to hog hunt on. Onyx, of course, is going to be a big supporter in that, and they have said that everyone who shows up to that is going to get some free Onyx. So the way you do that is to go over to our website and purchase your Element Hog Hunt t-shirt.
Make them squeal, baby.
Make them squeal, which is
comes straight from the mouth of KC.
That's it, dude. Yeah, I like to make them squeal, you know. And with old Buckshot, it works sometimes. Go purchase that shirt. We won't ship them at all. Okay, you can't just get a shirt. You have to come to the event to get your shirt. But it's just $15. You know, it ain't like we're making money on the deal. We're just trying to cover the cost of the food and make sure that we don't have, you know, out of the blue 600 people show up for this thing. That you know, we kind of that's our way of getting a good head count and, you know, making sure that you're committing to being there. But, yeah, I think we're trying to make this a pretty fun event that evening.
Yeah, it'll be February 12th, and then the hog hunt will be on the 13th. So the 12th is kind of a Q&A, and we'll be talking about maps and kind of, you know, sorting out what's going to happen the next day and that kind of thing. And then the 13th we'll be doing the hog hunt. And should be a good time, man. I'm pretty stoked about it. You know, it's going to be in Northeast Texas, so we haven't released, and we're not going to publicly release the location of that. You'll get that location. There's been several people that have already signed up for this thing, and we haven't released that location to them yet even.
Yeah,
but we're going to soon.
We're
going to
send that stuff in an email.
That's
kind of the idea.
Yep. So that way, like Casey said, we don't – you can't, the 600 people couldn't show up because then there would be nowhere to hunt, you know, on this particular WMA.
And we can't feed 600 people without knowing that 600 are coming. So we're going to actually probably put a cap on this thing. We don't really know for sure how many that is, but, you know, if you're interested in that, you want to hang out with us and you're serious about it, we'd love to have you. So head over to the website. We'll put a link to that below. TheElementWild.com is pretty easy to find. And, you can go make your purchase on the Make 'Em Squeal shirt. It's orange.
It's orange.
Which, in Texas, if you're going to hunt public land, unless you're a duck hunter for some reason, yeah. You don't have to wear, or you do have to wear 144 square inches of orange and have orange on your head.
Isn't that odd? That you can just...
It's even, actually.
Be a duck hunter. Yeah, it is. It is even. It's a square root, right?
Yeah.
I find it odd that if you're a duck hunter, you can just walk anywhere on public land, doesn't matter.
With a firearm. While bow hunters are required to have orange on.
Yeah. And in a lot of cases, no firearm on them.
Yes, in most cases. You have to have a LTC to have a firearm on you on Texas public land. Let me ask you this. What if you're doing a combo hunt and you are in duck hunt mode, and then you decide to deer hunt? Do you have to then whip your orange out? Also, in Texas, it's legal in most places when you're hunting any type of game, if you encounter wild hogs. Now, check the books on where you're at. Don't trust me. But if you encounter wild hogs, you can shoot that hog. So does that mean that you don't have to wear orange if you're duck hunting and you shoot a pig?
Sounds like it.
Sounds.
You know what else
loophole-y.
Is a weird loophole?
What's
is,
that?
Is you and I have encountered before is, go squirrel hunting, walk down a creek, see some wood ducks, and all of a sudden now I need steel shot.
Yeah.
And you bring steel shot, but what happens when that game warden checks you and goes, "Well, you got lead shot in your pocket"?
Mm-hmm.
Do you get in trouble for that, or do you go, "Oh, I was squirrel hunting until I saw those wood ducks"?
I guess you better just inform your game warden what you're going to do beforehand.
I guess so. Guys, I'm sure they would love for everybody that's going to be at the WMA to call them that morning.
Yeah. I think, honestly, though, we've kind of talked about this some in videos this year quite a bit. Like, when in doubt, just call the game warden. As opposed to trying to search stuff on the internet and figure out, dude, first of all, if you're on Texas Big Game Bow Hunting Association.com's forum, and so-and-so says it's legal, don't trust so-and-so, you know.
And let me tell you this. When you call that game warden, you be prepared with a few comeback questions. Because, now, I don't want to sound like I'm trying to challenge a game warden, you know, and be a jerk
or
whatever.
What is a rock duff, Tyler?
But I'm going to say this. It is easier, KC and I say this all the time, it is easier for people to say no than to find out an answer for you that
absolutely.
Makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's not just for game wardens, but that's anybody when you're calling about a regulation or if something's truly public land or whatever. Like, it is so much easier for that secretary to just be like, "No, you can't."
Yeah.
You know, when they don't have a clue, but they don't want to.
As soon as you start talking about hunting, people want to just, they want to lean towards no. And that could be for anything. Like you said, regulation. Like, you think about this. So we got the 13-inch rule that we talk about a lot here in Texas Public. And this plays into what we're about to talk about. But when you, if you were to send that, which the game wardens don't want you to do this, and they don't really want to answer this question anyway, but if you were to send that to a game warden that you know and you say, hey, is this deer 13 inches wide? What do you think? He's probably going to say, not quite.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because if it's close, he ain't going to say, yeah, shoot it, and then be in the wrong. And now we've got this issue where people that are above him might have to deal with something where he told his buddy, yeah, go ahead and shoot that thing. Exactly. You know what I mean? So
yeah, and it, quite honestly, you just don't want to put him in that position either.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Like, you don't want to put somebody in a hard place. We talk about this all the time, but the rule is there for the reason the rule is there. It doesn't matter if you agree with it or not. It is the law, right? So you just better off to err on the safe side. So speaking of the safe side of things, we erred on the safe side a good bit here lately.
Yeah.
Late season in Texas since 2016, right?
Mm-hmm.
2016, we had a pretty good late season. Mm-hmm. I missed Scar.
It died after the 22nd, though. I think the 22nd was the last good hunt that we had right in there.
Was it?
That late period.
Man, you have a better memory than I do.
Well, I edit everything, so I look at the dates a lot and just...
So, but... For quite a few days in there, like between my birthday, which is the 14th, and the 22nd, we had some pretty good hunts.
Yeah.
Saw quite a few deer. The 22nd was probably the day that I passed Pretty Boy the last time, and then we never saw him again.
Yeah.
He did. Speaking of 13-inch rule. since 2016, late December stuff has been pretty tough for the old element crowd on public land. Here and 2020 has proven to be a much different year, and I think there's a couple attributing factors. We had a very droughtful fall, which is a fun word I made up, but it was very droughty in the sense that there was not a lot of precipitation in September or October, and even in November. I bet you we were behind on all those months for our monthly rainfalls that we usually get. So that means that the winter rye didn't come up too much. And you combine that, which wild rye, whatever it is, it's, you know, green winter cool season grass. And you combine that with the fact that it was maybe the poorest acorn year I can remember, on any of the places I've been. There's a few water oaks that put off, but otherwise, like, dude, no acorns. The post oaks didn't drop a single acorn. The red oaks on my property didn't do, and last year they were rain, like the ground was carpeted. You know, there was more acorns than the hogs, deer, and squirrels could put down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a much, much different year. And I think that that has led to the deer on public land being a lot more mobile, a lot more movement coming from those deer than what we've had the past few years in December. And that's great for us. You know, that bodes well. So there's been two places that we've really kind of concentrated on, two areas, and they're both areas that we've hunted in the past. But this time of year, man, I'm really camera dependent. And I know camera dependency is not a great thing, but especially in November, you can kill deer when you're not seeing anything on camera. But this time of year, man, it's kind of about patterns, about deer densities, and where the deer are. So here's something I was thinking about yesterday, and you can tell me your thoughts on this deal, because I'm talking way too much right now, and you're going to sleep while you're driving, because I'm just blabbering.
No, but I don't go to sleep. Robot.
My thoughts are, we're trying to hunt places where the deer are moving around and where there's a high concentration of deer, and I think that something that I've done and you've done on Texas Public this year that we haven't done in the past is really hunt low pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I'm figuring this thing out a little bit more. I think the deer emigrate. I think it's emigrate means they leave. It's English language is weird how those sound like the same word.
Is this what we want California to do?
Yes.
Okay.
We want them to emigrate into the Pacific. I think that where we've struggled in the past is we'll pressure a place, and then other guys will move in who maybe hunt it a little bit harder than we do and a little bit less wind conscious, and the deer will leave, and we'll still try to hunt it for the last couple weeks because it had been good. And instead, speaking about a place in particular that we've been hunting, I do believe that the surrounding areas are getting pressured pretty hard, but there's this pretty small acreage little spot that we've found that on the map just doesn't look very good, that there's a bunch of deer in there, and I think it's because people have pushed them in there, and that's where they're having to exist.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that's kind of what's going on over there?
I think that I feel like it's more of a perennial low pressure spot, though.
Yeah.
I feel like that they have been pushed in there over years.
Yeah, I agree.
Not necessarily over the course of this season.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, you seen the guy that walks around Emory a lot? Got the backwards hat?
Yep.
You know what I'm talking about?
Uh-huh.
So we got another spot that I think he walks to. TR the Pinch. You seen that guy on our camera a few times?
Yeah.
It's the same guy, I think.
Yeah.
I'm joking about that, but this guy looks very similar to that guy for some reason. I've seen that guy a ton lately. He walks by my road every morning, it seems like, going to get him a beef jerky at Maxmart. But anyway, this TR Pinch area is a different place on public that we hunt, and we've had some pretty good success in the past. Well, this year, this guy, who apparently looks like a guy that walks around Emory a bunch, he has been walking through on our camera quite a bit, and I don't think he's seen it one time somehow.
Yeah.
But he's walking in that area a lot. And what's wild is that we had some pretty good bucks on there in, I believe, October. Maybe September and October. I can't remember when we got that camera out right there. But, like, earlier before the rut, we had some pretty good bucks in there. And, like, with some regularity. And then this dude walks through the camera for the first time, and it almost completely shuts off for, like, the next week.
Yeah, and this is prime rut dates.
Yeah.
For Texas.
Yeah, it starts to get into November. You hunted there once, and you were on the camera, and it wasn't long after he was on the camera, and that camera was, like, just not – I mean, there wasn't any bucks on it. And this is a – you know, we call it a pinch because it's a pretty hard pinch, so we're not missing a ton of deer coming through there.
Mm-mm.
And, I mean, there's some. I know there is, but, yeah, there – it was just crazy how all of a sudden two or three shooter bucks turned into zero for, like, a week. So
– yeah.
I think, like, that you see that a lot in these areas where you have either annual or perennial soft spots that all of a sudden get infiltrated, and those deer are not very tolerant of that, which is, you know, I don't know. It's a weird thing, man, because I do think that there are so many little small soft spots
mm-hmm.
in these properties that, like, those deer know where they are, and so they move to a different soft spot. It's not that they had to move to a different property or onto private or whatever, you know.
I think that there's enough stuff out here on public in East Texas for them to eat that they'll figure out where they can live and be safe.
Yeah.
And I think that the deer don't mind. Like, crap, dude. You know, we go to places in the Midwest – and you figure out that deer travel. And speaking of, let's talk about this for a second. We checked a card the other day that we had two cameras on this piece of public, and they're pretty far apart. I can't remember what our straight line distance was, but it's a long way. 2.3 miles, straight line distance, had a buck with a very defining feature that there. It's impossible for it to be different deer.
Drop time.
Yeah, drop time.
I'll
and,
say it.
He was... I mean, it was like a month, right? But that deer was 2.3 miles away, straight line distance.
Yeah.
More than likely, this deer covered 5 or 6 miles to get to this camera.
Pretty much crossed the interstate.
Yeah.
You know?
Insane, dude. Like, I can't fathom that happened. So, that goes to tell you those deer don't mind doing some traveling, right? So, they're going to find a soft spot, and this time of year, they've got 16 hours of darkness in a day, right? Something like that,
or the longest day of the year was recently,
14.
Yesterday, or shortest, sorry.
So yesterday was the shortest daylight period, 14 hours of darkness. Like, that's plenty of time for a deer to go somewhere and find something to eat and then go back home, you know. So they're traveling a lot.
Yeah.
Anyways, all
and,
the,
and your point about the food thing is also a good point, because I feel like that it's not that, and it's, I feel like, I mean, it is like, I mean, you, your point was that, you know, they can find food just about anywhere, but it's also in the same kind of manner, like, there's not better food in other places.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like,
we
yeah, they can scratch out
country.
A living everywhere, but they also can't really find it. Like, there's not some farmer that's 3 miles away that they could go all of a sudden live on that left their corn standing. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that's just not what it looks like around here. They're going to be eating greenbrier and ryegrass out of the ditch, you know?
Yeah.
It's out of the road
and
ditch.
Just eating dead leaves and stuff. Yeah. I mean, deer around here are tough.
Bodark.
Yeah. Mm. So, all that to lead up to the fact that I went in and checked a camera. I did a public land hang the other day and checked a bunch of cameras. And found this camera was the one that was hot and didn't have any humans on it and had quite a few deer. And it's a DMA, which we've talked about quite a bit. If you don't know what we're talking about, check out the public land hotspots videos. We'll put a link to that below. But a DMA is like a situation where it's kind of a pinch, kind of a hub. It's just a place where deer spend a lot of time. And really, a DMA is where you have a bunch of small factors that really make something a good place to hunt. You know, it's not like, oh, that's a definite bottleneck or something like that. You know, it's just got a couple things going for it that make it to where it's a good spot where deer, it's a deer movement area.
And DMA is also in the same vein of like not having any better food in any particular parcel. It's like this DMA typically has no better place for a main trail. So like in this DMA swath, there's not either there's not really great trails at all, or there's several good trails or whatever. So there's, it's like you don't really know which one to sit on. But usually what it ends up being in East Texas is, you know, not very good trails
exactly.
the way through the DMA.
Yeah, so
we had this camera. We hung this camera. This is the second season this camera's been hung in this spot, right?
Yes.
We hung it two summers ago.
And the reason that we went back in there is because the first pull was so good. The first year was so good, we never hunted it.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to see how much pressure it'll take from us before it changes.
Mm-hmm, me too.
Because it's a place that you can't help but be intrusive when you go in there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we'll get into the hunts a little bit here, but we got smelled both times that we've been in there. Because what you're doing is you're setting up on a habitat transition line, but it's very feathered. So it's not like a fence row or anything. It's just kind of where you go from lowland to upland. Mm-hmm. And like Tyler was saying, there's not well-defined trails. I went in there the first time by myself and hunted this place. I actually hunted – this is kind of a rookie move, but I'm not worried about doing it because sometimes I feel like a rookie. had a trail camera and had decent bucks every couple days on it, so I set up pretty much where I could shoot at the trail camera, you know, because, like, I mean, it's a 1 in 3 shot if there's buck every couple days that you're going to have a deer walk by your trail camera. Well, I ended up seeing 3 bucks that night, and all I saw was bucks, and they were – the first deer was on its feet at, like, 4:30 cruising, and this was pretty late in December. I think it was, like, December 15th or something. I don't know. The 12th. It was December 12th, okay. Which isn't quite late season for around here, but it's definitely hard post-rut. And now we're in the 20s, that's definitely late season. But it seems like the deer are kind of still in the same pattern over there. But anyways, this buck cruises from the direction I came in from, cruises right by me. And he was like at 35 yards, which is probably a pretty good poke. I'm probably not going to take that. Anymore. I used to when I'm like, oh yeah, sure. But the more you hunt, the more you realize that's pretty far on a little East Texas jackrabbit buck.
Mm-hmm.
2-year-old, probably 12 inches wide. And I'm going to be honest, guys, I have gotten to where I like to shoot stuff. I've only killed one buck this year. That's not quite enough deer meat for me and my family. I would have been happy to shoot that deer and take him home, and the 13-inch rule saved his life. Mm. And you can be critical of that if you want to, and that's fine, you know, but we're all a little bit different, guys, and, if you wouldn't shoot that buck, I'm happy for you too. But at this point in the season, I'd been kind of happy to shoot that deer because it'd been a lot of fun. So 13-inch rule saved his life. And let me tell you this. The 13-inch rule saves the lives of deer that are legal very often. Because what happens is, in East Texas, on public land, and on other places in public land too, it's very thick because a lot of times the public land is the habitat and the food is elsewhere. And in East Texas, it's kind of just the habitat and the food. But you get where I'm going with this. If you have a 13-inch antler restriction and you have to assess if that deer is going to make that, unless he's like 18 wide and he's like, oh, automatic shooter, like you have to sit there and think about it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make a age judgment on the deer, and then you have to kind of either guess his width or get a good portrait view of the deer to see how wide he is. And they tell you ear tips, which we've kind of figured out that on a mature buck, ear tips are probably 14 or 14 and a half wide. But that's kind of the going measurement, you know, an ear tips alert. Well, first of all, who wants to alert their deer to see if they're 13 inches wide? But, yeah, hey, Mr. Deer, hey, let me see your width here.
Look over here.
Anyways.
I'm this weird big thing hanging out from the tiny swamp ash.
Look at me. I'm the giant brown blob. if you're in a thick spot and the first time you see the deer is 40 yards away, like, you're trying to assess if he's a shooter or not, and then you got to grab your bow and do all this stuff. Well, a lot of times you miss out on an opportunity to shoot a deer because you're trying to figure that out. So,
yeah. Add a camera grab in there, and you definitely miss that opportunity.
Yeah, like we said in the past, guys, if you don't self film and you have the drive to do so, redirect your drive. I had another buck later that evening come through. That first buck cruised right through, never smelled me, never did anything. Awesome encounter. I was stoked because, quite honestly, seeing a buck on Texas public land is a pretty big feat, to tell you the truth. You text your friends about it. I had a second buck that I thought was going to be him because he came from the direction that this little buck went to. But I looked, and I could tell he had a really dark forehead and a bigger body. He's coming right at me, and I said, gosh, this might be a shooter. So I, assess that how wide he is. I think he's going to get there, and I think I recognize the deer from trail camera, so I kind of knew what he would end up being. And grab my camera, grab the bow after that, and by the time I do all this, the deer is 35 yards away. I'm being as still as possible, but the woods are stiller than I can be, and this deer picks me off. Which ticks me off. For the next 10 minutes, I have a blow fest on a 3-year-old that was probably legal and probably going to get shot. And I got a little bit antsy, but, man, at the same time, I've gotten pretty careful and pretty good at moving when deer are around. You know how to do it. Not by no means perfect because he caught me, but whenever, like, you drop a milkweed and it just falls to the base of your tree, and then you know that it's pretty still and it's hard to get away with much. And to be quite honest, even if I got to the point of drawing my bow, I don't know if I could have drawn my bow and that deer not spook, just because it was that still. But another example where maybe 13-inch rule might have saved this deer's life because I had to spend 3 seconds assessing what he was. Good buck encounter, and he ended up blowing for the next 10 minutes. And then I saw another buck right at last light that was probably a little bit too narrow, but nice framed younger deer. But the point is that there's quite a few bucks in this area, and it's a wider DMA that I can't cover on my own. So I go back and report to Tyler, call him that night, tell him all about it, and we kind of make plans to go in and hunt another time in there together and do something we've talked about a whole lot but never have actually put into play, where we just spread out pretty much at the edge of our bow ranges and just make a big hunter, if you know what I'm saying, out of two guys, to where, instead of 20 yards each direction, it's like a 60-yard swath that deer can't get through. It's like the circle of death, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
And it worked pretty good.
It's a Great Wall of China, baby.
That's it, baby. We had a pretty good hunt that evening, too.
Yeah.
Let me say this, and I want you to tell the story about it, but about one-fifth of the times I go out, once every five times, for y'all that can't do fractions, I feel real confident about my abilities. Like, I'm like, we're going to kill a deer. We're going to kill a buck tonight. And then it's never that ratio of actual kills, but that's how often I feel good about it, at least. And that night was a feel good.
Yeah.
Like, I Hunter, was feeling it.
Your boy Hunter would not like that. He ain't about that ratio.
Dude,
bro.
I'm all about the positivity kills, man. Yeah. And it's true, dude. I 100% believe that, first of all, 100% believe that you cannot put something out in the universe and make it come to fruition. That's not how things work. That is paganism at its finest. However, I do believe that if you are negative about a situation, it's going to go negatively for you in most cases. So you might as well be positive about things. And when you're positive, you make good choices, and good choices lead to good encounters.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. My soapbox.
Yeah, so that night, it was a very still night as well.
Yeah.
And I hadn't ever been in there to attempt a hunt. Things looked a lot different than when I've been in there scouting and that kind of thing.
Yeah, you'd only been in there in the summer, really, huh?
Yeah, I checked. I pulled the camera last year in January, I think, that was the one that we were like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe we didn't hunt there this year.
I hate those. They're
I just
so
ran in there
fun.
And grabbed the camera, you know? Yeah. Like, I was not paying attention to anything. At that point, we didn't know the potential of this place, really. We just went in there and scouted it real hard one day in the summer and got so tired and hot and tired of not finding, you know, definite sign at a decent distance from the truck that we decided to just throw the camera up and ended up making still a pretty good decision, apparently. So, anyway, we went in there and KC kind of shows me what's going on. We get to the camera and where he hunted and where the bucks were coming from and stuff. So, I was like, okay. And basically on this transition line that KC was talking about of cover, it is like a feathered transition. So kind of to explain it, it goes from the upland of like and I don't know if like the upland is just coincidentally has like fewer trees in it from like some kind of cut or something like that, mm-hmm. or what is going on exactly. But there's it almost appears that there's a few less trees in the upland stuff. So it goes from this upland, lots of CRP, groundsel bush,
cedars,
some bodarks, and, you know, kind of a few trees mixed in, hackberries and that kind of thing. And then also a lot of poison ivy, which is, you know, definitely a summer food source for them. And we have trail camera footage of them in the summertime
munching
in this area.
Down. Yeah.
So it goes from that, and it transitions slowly over into a lot more bodarks with less underbrush, less grass, less poison ivy. It starts to become lowland, floodplain type stuff, the very edge of it. And then eventually transitions into, and this is all, you know, mixed with everything that I'm talking about right now, other than really the grass goes away pretty quickly. And then it starts transitioning into ash trees, hackberries, elms, bodarks. And then that transitions into probably more like just kind of big river bottom ash type trees, right?
Yeah. Some hardwoods down in there somewhere,
yeah.
too.
And further on down hardwoods. And so lots of kind of just what most would deem worthless river floodplain type trees. And they're all like probably 30 to 40 foot is about as high as any of them get. So, you know, that's the very top of the tree.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And so that like, means that if you're going to actually hang in the tree, like 12 foot max kind of is the height.
I mean,
that
you can, there are a few trees you might could get to 15, but the issue is that this is floodplain. So you've got a million trees growing in there.
Yeah, the density of trees is like there's, and some of y'all who hunt like thickets or clear cuts might know what we're talking about. But like whenever there's a trunk every 5 yards, that means that the higher you get, the less shots you have.
Yeah.
And that means your shots are getting closer and closer. So if you're anything above like your platform being an 8, your shots are 20 yards and in,
mm-hmm.
unless there's a weird clearing.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, I don't want to walk around that much and find the perfect tree as opposed to just hunting the tree that's on the sign that I want to hunt and deal with 15-yard shots. Because the good thing about 15-yard shots is it's harder to miss or harder to mess up.
Sure. You know? Yeah. So that's kind of the issue you run into. So, you know, I end up putting my platform at about 7 foot. This particular tree, I could have gotten quite a bit. I mean, I could have definitely doubled that. But I just wouldn't have had any shots other than, you know, 10, 7, 8 yards in, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
So it's difficult, especially when you're talking about hunting a DMA, to limit yourself to 15-yard shots, you know?
Yeah.
So there's just – this is this KC made the assumption that this is why this is a soft spot and why the deer are in there, is because there are not big trees to hunt and good shots to be had.
Yeah, it's not a place that dudes – it's not conducive to people hunting.
Yeah, exactly.
And we figured that out because we're having a hard time hunting it too, but we're having encounters, and quite honestly, we could have killed some deer this night.
Yeah.
So
I couldn't have.
Yeah.
you could
the
have.
The other thing about getting high in those trees is they're wiggly.
Yeah.
And the higher you get, the more wiggle you're going to have, you know.
We've decided that we need like a 20-mile-an-hour wind to hunt this
place.
Dude,
if we get a windy day, it's going down over there.
So.
And we might even got our buddy Hunter talked into going over there with us one day just to make the – make the Great Wall even greater. Make the Great Wall great again.
Yeah.
So that's what our plan is.
Yeah. But, so this place is, it's challenging to hunt. And people are sitting here screaming, well, just get on the ground. Well, it's river bottom flood plain. So there's not like brush.
You're going to look like a black bear on
like
the ground.
The
down
best
there.
Thing you could, the best opportunity you would have from the ground would be to get into like a multi-trunked boat arc or something.
Yeah.
And you know, put a few limbs in front of you or something.
And you're still going to stand out, man.
Dude, you're just going to stand out in there either way. So I think what the idea is for us in the future going forward is using the old Rod White trick and putting some paracord to some of these flimsy trees and just opening up a couple of 30-yard shots from a 15-foot platform, you know.
We've
what I mean?
Also talked about doing some ground blind stuff too.
Yeah
because
just leaving an old cheap ground blind in
leaving
there
it in there for, you know, however whatever is the legal amount of time, right guys? Not the 2 years that you find, like sometimes you'll find the frame of a ground blind and then some tattered cloth and you're like, oh man, that's quite the thing to leave in the woods. I am 100% convinced that at least in this part of the country you can't set up a ground blind and the deer be cool with it within a couple days.
Yeah.
Like, it takes them a little while.
I don't know what was happening in my property, but it took me – I didn't see a deer for four hunts after I set my ground blind out on
I think
my property.
They got to get used to it for sure.
Yeah.
You know, I know that there's some hunts, especially like in South Texas and stuff, where people just pop a ground blind up and shoot stuff. And it's like, man.
Well, everything is –
yeah,
you know, the
round
same
and short,
round and short and same color pretty much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
the women and everything. Round and short down there.
Oh, that's a good one.
But
so anyway, I'm set up in this tree about 7 foot. My platform's about 7 foot up. And I assumed deer were going to come from a direction that was about probably 20 degrees off of the direction they ended up coming from. And so what I planned on doing was setting up behind, you know, I'm in a saddle, so setting up opposite side of the tree from where I thought the bucks might come from. And I was thinking they were going to come down this transition line because I was hunting very close to the transition line in case he was hunting further off. And I say the transition line, the transition of upland to lowland, the grassland to...
Which
the
transition is a bow hunter's range in itself. It's probably 30 yards wide,
sure.
The feather.
Yeah.
And I'm hunting on what looks to be a parallel trail of buck sign. So it looks to me, especially from hunting there once, it looked like there were bucks cruising 30 yards off of that transition line, kind of smelling around, and there was
easier
a fresh,
to walk through.
Yeah, it's easier to walk through. There was a fresh scrape, and I could see three fresh rubs, meaning rubs that were made within the past 2 weeks from my tree stand.
Mm-hmm.
And a scrape that had been worked that day. So, pretty good spot, too.
Yeah. So, and I had pushed over by that transition line because I wanted to see out into that upland stuff as far as possible so that I could see if deer were actually using the upland stuff to travel through and to search for doe bedding and that kind of thing through, and we were missing them on the camera or whatever. So, I get set up, and I'm set up for deer moving right down this transition line. Well, they ended up coming kind of at an angle from kind of deep into the floodplain wood stuff, you know, a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So like I said, about 20 degrees off maybe of what I expected. So at that point, when I start hearing something walking not long after I'd gotten set up, and I'm looking for it through all this thick timber, and I finally see it. It's a buck coming at me, and I am looking like the largest tree coming off of a tree that's in that whole thicket, you know. And I'm just completely silhouetted, you know, to this buck. Anyway, he's coming at me, and the first thing I think, like the first thing I when I see him, I'm ready to, you know, I have to grab my camera and get it on him, but I'm like getting ready to grab the bow next because mm-hmm. this deer is maybe even the buck you saw the first time yeah. around, you know. Like,
which I actually saw a buck before all this happened too. Had a buck come in from the direction we walked in, just like the last time. And it's pretty much like getting my camera arm set up at, you know, 4:15 or whatever it was, and there was a buck already in here, and he got to like 25 yards and then smelled me, I think, but he didn't get real weird. He just kind of left.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's back to your.
So well, yeah, this deer's coming in, and dude, it's like I finally see him. By the time I get the camera on him, he's at 30 or more or less, and before I could even go to grab a bow, like you said, it's real still and just hard to move at all. He's at 20. In between 20 and 25, he's really close, and he kind of comes around the side of this big boat arc that I had kind of from that direction in front of me, and as soon as he comes around it, I mean, I'm not moving a muscle. He looks right at me, sees me just sticking out from that tree, you know, pretty obvious, and then, you know, he pauses for a little while, looks at me. I'm trying to get some footage, and then he just makes this big, like, 90, probably more than 90 degrees, you know, 110 degree loop around me, and he's at 25 to 30 the whole time. So, like, wasn't spooked. He just thought, well, that's kind of weird. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I might should just make a loop downwind. And, I mean, not to the point where he, like, backed off and was out of range or anything. Like, he just went, kept going 25 yards, big loop around me. Ends up, there's not really any wind, but you know, the way that it was drifting, I think he gets downwind of me and smells me. And it was weird. He didn't like flat out bust, you
know. Those deer were being weird, man.
They felt comfortable in there, you know.
Yeah.
It was like where they wanted to be, and they hadn't seen a lot of pressure. But, you know, you never know how a deer reacts when you're close to – you know, when you're close to human activity, and we weren't like super close to like where people or houses mm-hmm. or anything is, but I mean, the deer's seen people before. You know what I mean?
Here's something else to think about that we've never put a lot of thought into, but this year we got to talk to a guy who had some experience blood tracking deer with dogs, and we learned that the lower the humidity level, so the drier the air, the more difficult it is for scent to travel through the air. That morning, it had been a rainy day, and then a front came in. We had a wind shift, and the wind got out of the north, and it dried out. And I just kind of wonder if maybe the humidity was, you know, strikingly low, and those deer just weren't getting good whiffs of us.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't getting a big old nostril full, and so they just were uneasy. But, like, that buck didn't get super weird. He actually bounded over to me and hung out. Like, he was in our lives for like an hour.
Yeah.
So, because like more deer ended up coming.
Uh-huh.
To you, pretty much.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was in the spot.
Yeah.
But I honestly, on that wind, would have, if I'd have been set up 30 yards to the south,
mm-hmm.
then I would have been money. Like, yeah. I wouldn't have had deer smell me at all.
Pretty
you
much
know?
If you'd have set up in the tree that I set up in the first time, kind of,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and at the same time, like, if I had never been seen by that buck, he would have walked within 5 yards of my tree.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
You know, I mean, I was on the money there. I had some does come in, and I think another little buck. I can't remember at this point. I had to go back and look at the footage. But several, you know, doe-like deer came in and circled around the tree and you know, saw me and smelled me and everything else. But never really bad enough to, you know, leave the country too
yeah,
much.
Yeah, well, those does ended up, smelling you, and then kind of just working their way down to me.
Yeah.
The mama gets skylines me at 15 yards and then runs like 15 yards, still in range of me the whole time. And then they kind of meander around, and then the 6 point or whatever he was, the little buck, ends up seeing them, getting all excited, and ends up chasing them around. And we have a little rut fest down here. Yep. Like, he's into it, like, you know, full-fledged, like, dogging. And it got real exciting for a little bit, even though, like, we knew it was a deer we weren't shooting because he was too close to tail. That's the other thing, is like, a lot of deer are a little bit lopsided. To where, if you really look at them closely, one side's a little bit bigger, a little bit wider than the other. This buck is like that, to where, man, if both of his sides are like his, whichever side, let's just say left side, he's probably going to break 13. So, like, I'm sitting there the whole time, and this deer is, like, within 40 yards of me for at least 30 minutes. And the whole time I'm, like, talking myself into it and out of it. I'm like, I think he's going to get there, you know, or whatever. And they're like, no, you don't need to shoot that deer anyways, man. It's okay. You shot a big deer. Just wait. It's going to be fine, you know.
Hey.
But, yeah, it was still exciting, even knowing that we weren't going to shoot that buck, to see him chase does around, you know. Because then it makes you say, okay, well, is his dad or granddad also going to want to do that here in a second?
Right, you know? Before dark, you know. I mean, we were in a spot, you know, and you never know how far that
camera data is good.
Yeah. And you never know how far the – on a quiet day, the sound of deer running around is going to travel to another deer, man. You know?
I've been thinking about that. Actually, we're actually headed back from hunting a piece of private that our buddy Hunter has, and he invited us down to do a little hunting and just hang out, you know, just maybe a little bit of something different country. But anyways, I was sitting there in the tree stand. It was quiet, you know, crunchy leaves. I'm like, man, nobody ever talks about this, but what if you got down on the ground and just got you, like, a couple hoe handles or something and made the sound of four legs quite a bit in the leaves, you know, and, like, sounded like a deer running around. Like, what are the odds that that would work as good as rattling on November 17th?
You could coin the phrase just rutting around,
just
calling.
Rutting around. Yeah, just rutting them in. That's what I'm going to do. I think it's a thing. But, so the big boy didn't come back. It didn't come in that night. And we're scheming, trying to figure out if – and this is a tough thing to do, especially this late in the year, where you know that deer probably are slightly patternable. They're probably not doing too much different. And now in Texas, especially East Texas, that's not always the case. Like, bucks don't have daily beds. I just do not see it at all. You know, it's just not a thing here. This is – well, we'll talk about that in a second. But we're kind of trying to figure out, can we still hunt that and maybe shoot a big deer there? Or are we going to have to push in or adjust where we're setting up to find the big buck that lives in that? There's a couple good bucks, shooter bucks in there, you know. But are we late enough in the year that they're just not quite getting to you in daylight there? Do we need to move?
So what we assumed was where we were at was staging – going to a food source that evening, and we assumed that because of how the deer acted, you know. I mean, I had those does. When those does showed up, dude, they wanted to just stand there for forever, like,
eating
even before
nasty,
I
dry
spooked
leaves,
them or whatever,
just chilling.
So I mean, I think they were just like right before they got to the transition to the upland stuff and then further out into food sources and stuff, I think they were going to just, you know, chill there for a little while. So the question is, like you said, is this staging not where the big boys are going to be staging? Are they going to be staging further back in? And that's the question we've had. You actually had a buck, I think, right at dark. I tried to spotlight for you.
Yeah, there was I had deer like 30 yards, like right at last light, probably just after shooting light. But I don't want to, like, start breaking down with a deer right there. So Tyler, you know, I wasn't like saying, hey, there's a deer coming. But I texted him like, hey, I got deer here. Just, you know, don't break down yet. And as I'm texting him this, he drops his headlamp on the ground.
Flashlight.
And it's a big,
I had
big bright sucker.
It was in the top of my lid, the lid of my bag.
Yeah.
And the lid was open. The zipper was open. And so when I went to, like, start stuffing stuff in my bag, opened up the lid, drop the flashlight out. It lands right on the button, and just it's a bright flashlight, dude, and it's shooting right at him, dude. Yeah. I'm like, oh no.
I thought I couldn't tell what had happened, but I just saw that light and it never went off. And I was like, I guess Tyler's just like looking down with his headlamp the whole time. I couldn't figure out what was going on.
Dude, but one of the funniest things you said to me that day was, are you hunting a pumpkin tree?
You look like a pumpkin over there in your orange.
Yeah.
What was funny is, yeah, we'll leave that for another time. Deer in the ditch. That's what we've been seeing the whole time on the way home.
Spooky dogs.
They're way tinier here.
They are tiny.
So, what was I going to say about that property? A couple takeaways is we think we're going to need to hunt that on a stronger wind. We're really kind of waiting on that. We don't want to get in there and booger it up too bad on you know, not as good a hunts, because there's a good chance to actually kill a good buck in there. You think that you need to move back a little bit. There's also the chance that you and I both might need to push further into the property or something to try to find bucks.
Yeah.
But I also think that I would go back and hunt the exact tree that I hunted that evening and have a chance of killing a buck, because there's bucks with it on their mind in there still. And yeah. I was like 10 yards from a fresh scrape, and I was on a rub line on a good trail. And I think that evening – I didn't have a good buck come right down my trail, but I think it's a thing that could happen right there, you know. So this time of year, it's real hard to just grind it out, for lack of a better term, you know, and just hunt the same stand over and over again waiting, because you just feel like a deer isn't going to do much different. But our rut's weird here, you know. Like there's still plenty of does that are coming back into cycle right now, or coming off of it or whatever, and there'll be does in January and even into February that are not bred. And quite honestly, most of the WMAs around here have so much pressure that I do believe that the buck to doe ratio is pretty skewed towards the heavy on the doe side. So there's probably a few does that aren't getting bred. You know, we don't have broken tines very often where we're at. We don't see a lot of that type of stuff. You don't ever hear deer fighting in the woods. You know, rattling doesn't work very good. So you just got to imagine that these bucks aren't in high competition for does. Therefore, there's some does that aren't quite getting got to and, you know, aren't getting bred. So I think there's always a chance of seeing a buck trying to get after does or cruising around, you know, especially on a cold front day. And really that's what we're kind of waiting on right now. Not waiting, it's not the right word. Looking forward to, but this year our deer season ends on January 3rd, and I just don't know if we're going to get any cold weather between now and then. It's going to get some cooler stuff, but
yeah.
Nothing great.
Well, so, you know, we're getting our cool weather is in that early morning, you know, and so, you know, like yesterday, for instance, it was, the water in my RV was frozen until like noon.
Yeah, you know what I mean? It was cold.
It was cold, which that for Texas, that's pretty cold. But the thing is, it's getting up to like 70, you know, in the afternoons. So it's I don't know if that's like I don't know exactly if that what that why that is, you know, because we're not like desert or arid climate here, but. The afternoons are going to be pretty warm, it looks like, for the foreseeable future on some of this stuff.
You know, I think that one of the things that we really need to talk about somewhat as we're kind of like closing and having some ideas about this stuff is that if you're a guy who takes in hunting media, you're going to hear that in the late season, the evenings are your ticket, food sources in the evening. And that can be the case. But where we live in this little area of Texas, and really probably the eastern half and most of the south, your cool weather's in the morning, just like Tyler said. You're going to see more deer movement in the morning than what, like, your folks in Iowa are going to see, right? Mm-hmm. But you just might have to kind of adjust where you're sitting. They might not be on the corn piles, or they might not be, you know, on green pasture in the morning or whatever. But that cool weather's going to make those bucks stay on their feet for a little bit longer, you know, or they'll feel comfortable doing it. Whereas, like, you know, 75 degrees, I get pretty hot too, walking around, you know, and I'm kind of swole up like a buck. So I know how they feel, but just don't discount the mornings, guys. And it can be some of the best hunting late season, you know, just because the deer are just a little bit slower to get to their beds. They're moving around, you know, and you can hunt till 9:30 or 10 and it still be pretty cool. So it's definitely worth doing. Now, to contradict that, I went and hunted a different public place a couple days ago. and had a just really great mature buck encounter, grunted the deer in to 40 yards and didn't get a shot in the evening, and he showed up about 4:50, which is before sunset. So you just never know, quite honestly. But really,
hunt when you can, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. It sounds cliche, but just hunt whenever you can, because you can't kill them, you know, sitting in the house or cooking supper, you know, which throw something in the crock pot midday, that way your wife's happy, and then, you know, go hunting that evening. And I think that's what we're going to do.
Just make your wife cook.
That's it. Good luck. My wife cooked last night, and it was tasty, but she makes now don't take this derogatory if you're the kind of person who lives in such an abode, but she cooks trailer house meals, which is like fish sticks and like last night she made some Polish sausages and some canned green beans kind of mixed up together in a pan with some potatoes, and it was tasty, but it's like on the verge of not being homemade, you know what I mean? Which it's fine. I'm proud of her. You know, she wasn't taught how to cook, so she's trying to do stuff. And, you know, make your wife cook. That's a good point, Todd. But Christmas holiday's coming up for us. Actually, this is probably going to release sometime around Christmas. So Merry Christmas, guys. Hunt with you can is never more appropriate than probably around the Christmas holidays. Do your best to not tick your family off and be there for them during Christmas. But also tell them, hey, guys, we can schedule Christmas for like 11 a.m. You know, we can go hunt in the morning or whatever. And I think that's what Tyler and I are going to try to do, is just hunt a little bit around, you know, the family schedule and stuff, and then really make a hard push the last week or so of our Texas deer season here. So if you hadn't filled your buck tag, it is not too late. You can make it happen. Tyler is Mr. December. 2 years ago, I shot a meat buck on the 1st of January after staying up to midnight that night to bring in the new year for 2019. So, like, it can be done.
Yeah, it can,
man. Tell you guys. So,
I'm going to be sad when it's over, man.
I know, man. This has been a great season. It's given me anxiety for it to come to a close, just because I'm like, man.
Me too.
Can it be get much better than this?
Like, I used to cry when deer season was over, man.
I hear you.
Telling you.
We all cry a lot, though.
Duck season, especially, like, when I was in, like, high school, I loved duck hunting so much. I couldn't even stand for it to close, man.
Yeah.
But, you know, by the time duck season's over, it's about time to go throw a blue and black jig on Lake Fork.
Ooh, baby. Man, that would be fun. I would like to catch a bass, but I seem to not be good at pre-spawn, so I don't know if it's going to happen. Anyways, guys, Merry Christmas. Kiss your family. Tell them you love them. Don't get COVID. And if you do, just chill. It's going to be all right, you know, just make sure you're keeping your loved ones safe, and remember, this is your element.
La vida!
You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins. Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today.